It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It is Independence Day weekend, and it's just exciting to be here for a variety of reasons, because we're headed into a wonderful American holiday, Independence Day, coming up on Tuesday. We're here on a Sunday before that to take your calls and your questions and talk about everything that happens in the world and the important things that we're focused on right now. We've wrapped up the beginning of of 2017, so we're through the first half of the year. It's been a relatively, very eventful political period of time and an eventful geopolitical period of time, but the markets have been relatively just placid. There's just not a lot of movement, just a slow trickle north to the northeast. If you're looking at a chart, the Dow up 8%, the S&P up 8%, the NASDAQ up 14%. Are rockier times ahead? The answer is yes. It's always yes, because we don't stay with this low level of volatility forever. Volatility will pick up without question. The question really goes back to, you, what are you doing from a market perspective that meets your goals? How do you, where do you head, and where do you find in this vast world that we live in a place to generate income, particularly as you get closer to retirement? If you're 40, you don't need new income from your investments. What do you do with the income from dividends and interest and distributions from stocks and various bonds and places like REITs or publicly traded energy pipeline companies we're going to talk about right now? You take that cash flow and you reinvest and you reinvest and you reinvest if you're in your 40s and your 50s. And when you hit 60 or 60 plus and it's time to retire, then that's when you start living on that income and you generate your own pension and you generate your own paycheck and your own cash flow. A couple of the calls that we had in the 10 o'clock hour, in the 9 o'clock hour, were investors saying, hey, should I buy this annuity to give me more income? Should I buy this immediate annuity to get me more income? Should I buy gold to hedge against a correction? And these are all the things that investors think about as we go through a world that is in a constant state of flux. It's an unsettled world that we live in. It's probably scarier today than it's ever been, as information continues to bombard us in greater volume than has ever happened in the history of the world. You know, our brains haven't been able to evolve to block out noise in just the last few decades. That is the tidal wave of information and negative, scary information that hits us all. We haven't had a lot of evolutionary time to evolve in order to put up walls of protection for that. So we're constantly in a state of fear as investors. Now, one of my answers to that, and investing's always been an emotional proposition. Yes, it's mathematical. Yes, it's just about the numbers. Yes, it's about economic data. But on the other side of that, money is so hard to come by and so hard to earn and takes so long to do so that it's a very emotional process. And the more money you have, the more nervous you become to lose it. And the law of large numbers kicks in. The law of large numbers, in my opinion, is that when you've got $10,000 and it goes down by 1%, not a big deal. You have $1 million and it goes down by 1%. Well, now that's 10 grand. And it starts to get a lot, there's a lot more emotion tied to that. My answer for this is income investing, because there's at least some predictability when it comes to investing in an otherwise very unpredictable world. We're all investing for one reason. We want total return. Total return, very simple equation. It's just growth plus income. Growth is at the mercy of the market to some extent. Income is much more predictable, because we know that a company, if it pays a dividend, it has the cash flow to do so. And if you find a company that is in unstable economic ground and has been paying dividends for 5 years, 50 years, 100 years, which is the case in some companies, then you have a high degree of certainty that that's just going to continue, and it may actually slowly ratchet higher. Bonds, if you buy higher quality bonds and you know the underlying entity's not going out of business, then you have a very high likelihood that you're going to get your interest and you get your money back at the end of the term of the bond. Distributions, on the other hand, come from places like publicly traded REITs, real estate investment trusts, pipeline companies, closed-end funds. So there's a little bit more nuance when it comes to the pipeline industry. And that's what I want to talk about today. So let's talk about this new industry, not new industry. I'd say it's an industry that's emerged from the ashes as a stronger industry and in a slightly more conservative, balanced industry. And that has to do with these pipeline and energy transportation companies. So that's what I want to get into today here on Money Matters. Good morning. If you have calls and questions about how income investing relates back to you, what age does this start? What kind of accounts do you do this in? Is it for a Roth, an IRA, an after-tax account? How does your 401k potentially do this? Happy to take your calls and questions or anything that goes back to your own particular situation. And you just want a second opinion. We love doing that here on Money Matters. It's the best part of this show is when you call in and us trying to give you our on-the-spot objective financial advice. We're one of the few radio shows in the nation or the world remaining where we're fortunate enough to have an audience big enough to get great calls about scenarios. And if you have a question, I guarantee you there's another 1,000 people listening that have something similar that they've thought about or questioned, and we're happy to walk it through with you. So the number in the studio here on this Sunday morning, and we are live on this Independence Day weekend, 404-872-0750 is the number in the studio. Again, our line here, phone lines open. Ryan Ely there to take your call and patch them through. The number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So the last couple of years, let's call it the last 2 years, it has not been great for the pipeline industry. And as far as if you look at the stock performance, you've seen a lot of carnage. And it's really for two reasons. One, despite the original and let's call it the traditional, just call it the fee-based MLP intention. So MLP stands for Master Limited Partnership. These are companies that for the most part were supposed to be are toll roads. They own the pipe that crude oil goes through, that natural gas goes through. They are the purveyors. They build these pipes, they own these pipes, and then they effectively charge a toll for another big energy company to run their fossil fuel through. So it originally is intended to be a pretty simple model. Just, hey, we're going to charge you a fee. Shouldn't be based on the price of oil. It's just the volume that goes through. So it should be a pretty steady business. But a lot of these pipeline companies that were supposed to be traditional toll road type models, they got way off track. They got way off track chasing more lucrative business lines all within the energy sector. So in 2010 and 11 and 12, they migrated away from just being these predictable pipeline providers or toll road models, and they dove headfirst into the much less predictable business of E&P or exploration and production, which is a riskier game. And because they migrated towards let's call it more oil sensitive businesses or business lines, they got crushed. They got crushed when oil prices cratered from $100 down to $26. So MLPs have been on a rocky road for the last 2 to 3 years. If you look at EMLP for the year, which is, I would say, a more traditional pipeline-oriented ETF, exchange-traded fund that has multiple MLP companies inside of it, down about 3% over the past 2 years. And that doesn't count the income. So if you count the income, it's net positive a little bit. And then you look at MLPI, which is a slightly broader version of MLPs that have ventured off into the E&P businesses in some cases, down about 25% over the past 2 years. Again, if you count the income, it's not nearly, you've got a fair amount of income each year, so the number isn't all that bad from a total return perspective, but the price has come under some pressure. Most of that was back in the back half of 2015, and there's been a lot of recovery since, but still down in price over the last couple of years. Fortunately, many of these players, let's say, the ones that who survived, have found some real religion. And they've migrated, these companies, these pipeline companies, have migrated back towards more predictable, stable, the stable part of the energy business. And that's simply the transportation and storage business. Transportation of fossil fuels. Old, stodgy, boring business. You're running oil from state to state through a pipeline. And we're also seeing billions of dollars of new pipeline projects coming online back under the Trump administration. We know the Keystone XL pipeline, the Dakota Access pipeline, Atlantic Sunrise. These are billion-dollar pipeline projects that will allow for even more movement of oil and energy around the world. And if you think about some examples here, if you look at Plains All American, so PAA, pipeline company, infrastructure, they do crude oil, natural gas, transportation facilities, they do supply logistics for moving oil around. You look at a pipeline chart of where they are moving oil from, it starts all the way up in Canada, Port Saskatchewan and Edmonton, down to Casper, Wyoming, down to Colorado, down to Cushing, Oklahoma, all the way down to Texas. That's the business model that they're in. Now, the fee business in a lot of these companies, so the simple part, which is just, hey, we're going to charge you a fee to move oil through our pipelines, has really started to grow. This is them getting some religion in the last several years. Williams Partners, WPZ, will hit close to 97% of their business is just in what I would consider toll fees in 2017, compared to just 60% 4 years ago. So they've gone from 60%, pretty simple fee business, all the way up to 97%. Magellan Midstream Partners, MMP, they've gone from 80% fee-based all the way up to 91% fee-based. Plains All-American Pipeline Company, PAA, they went from 59% in fee-based business in 2011 all the way up to 90% in this year, 2017. That's a dramatic shift to a more stable cash flow business. And a stable cash flow business, or any business that is predicated on these stable cash flows, and the toll road model is certainly one of them, is what I want when I own companies for their cash flow and distribution. So that's the kind of model that I look to in order to generate steady cash flow. And we're seeing the MLP business get back into that mode of operation. You're listening to Money Matters. We're going to go quick news, weather, traffic, and phone lines here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. More Money Matters straight ahead.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Mix of clouds and sun today, with a 40% chance of thunderstorms, high 88. Weather tomorrow, scattered afternoon, evening storms, high 87, low 72. Weather brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Air. Good morning to the phones. Mary joins us from Decatur. Mary, what's up? How can I help?
Hi. I have a question about a transfer of funds from a retirement kind of government fund with very low fees.
TSP, I bet. Was it the TSP plan? Thrift Savings Fund?
Yes.
Okay. Into an IRA, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay. And so what's going on?
So the fee management fee is about $350 a month, and it basically was to have access to, I guess, one of these programs that if the rate goes so low or so high, they can make an automatic transaction so that your money isn't exposed to market risk as much.
So it's a market timing model. So it's $4,200 a year in fees. And what's the amount? What's the total?
Right now it's worth 286. I think when I went in, it was 280 or something.
Okay,
like
so that's exactly 1.5% a year is the management fee. So how is this something you've done for a while, or has it just been 2017?
I did it in May 2016.
And how are we doing so far since May? Is it how much? You just told me. You said you started with 280, and it's at 286 today, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not impressed at all, particularly since I left the government. The management fee at that point was 1%. I mean, it was 0.07%. 5% or something. Very low.
Yeah.
So I actually think I'm losing, and I'm not pleased about that. I don't really think it was a good investment decision.
Well, it's tough. I will tell you that if you go back over the last year, and this isn't the exact period of time, but if you go back a year from now, if I pull up this chart, I'm looking at the S&P 500 is up about 16%. The Dow is up about 19%. Now, that's July to July, but really yours is almost, I would say, virtually flat. So, and you're paying 1.5% a year to do it. Well, what's 6,000 on two? You've made about six on 280. Six. Wow. There we go. Six divided by 280. Yeah. You're up about 2% and the market's up about, well, call it 15%. So, yeah. So you're paying a lot for really, you've gotten zero, you've gotten almost no benefit out of this, Mary. Now, that part of that could be a lot of these timing models are promising the world as though they're going to capture all the upside of the market and just none of the downside. And that just rarely happens. Usually, I see one of these timing models that's meant to be to protect you. They really, very often, they do a pretty good job of protecting. But they just are, it's a lot like parking your money in a darker, in the mud. And it just gets stuck right. And it sits there. So I think to some extent, you're probably paying too much, number one. It's the strategy is the real issue beyond the cost. So I think it's time to look elsewhere here for a variety of reasons. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, Mary, we're happy to talk through some other options. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me and the team. Enjoy the weekend. More Money Matters straight ahead.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters Independence Day weekend. Wes Moss here to take your calls, questions. Try to help you decipher the world that we live in. Try to make it a little less scary. Despite what your internet browser pulls up and continues to track. And good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. And when I say that, we had a caller today that was worried about a market correction. And my answer, my thought was that, look, we're always going to have a market correction because that happens habitually in markets. We get 10% corrections on average every year. We get, or more than that even, we get 20% corrections every couple of years. So it's an inevitable process that the market goes through. And just because we haven't had one in a little while doesn't mean we're not going to have one. In fact, the probability, we get closer and closer. And it doesn't mean that the market breaks. It just means that that's the process, and that's why we diversify, and that's what we have to prepare for as investors. So the best portfolio is the portfolio for you that allows you to stay and participate in markets long term, whether that's a mix of stocks and bonds, or stocks and bonds and gold, and stocks and bonds and gold and REITs and MLPs, whatever works for you. That's the balance that you need to find. 404-872-0750, the number in the studio. Paul joins us from Roswell. Paul, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Russ. Before I forget, I want to wish you and your family a safe trip to Michigan.
Oh, thank you. You've been listening, so I appreciate that. I'm hoping for cooler weather.
Well, anyway, you have a safe trip. The question I have, I know you were talking about MLPs, and I used to have some, but they became so volatile, I got rid of them. And I have quite a few telecommunications, specifically AT&T and Verizon. And even T-Mobile pays a above-average standard dividend. My question is on Sprint, because I also have Sprint, and I'm getting a little anxious with them. They don't pay the dividend. Their financials are probably the weakest among the four. What's your thought on Sprint long-term? Do you think they'll be taken over? Do you think there's any interest in being taken over?
Well, so here's my thought. I think that you're going to get, it wouldn't surprise me, first of all, if, Paul, if you think about this trend that we've seen in the last, really it's been a multi-decade trend. It seems even more evident today is this, and I've written about this, called the shrinking stock market, right? The Wilshire 5000 that used to be 5,000 stocks, aptly named in the 70s, today has more like 3,000. And why? Well, it's because, and this is an example within the telecom space that you're talking about or asking about, what happened to what's going to happen to Time Warner? Well, it's not going away. It's getting eaten by AT&T. What's happening to Yahoo? It's not going away. Yahoo's getting eaten or taken over by Verizon. So if you that's really in the telecom space, right? It's a capital intensive business to be able to get enough towers and data out there in order to service the population and service not only calls, but now more data than ever, right? These companies are not going to be able to survive long term if they aren't doing something that's progressive, that is content related, that's understanding the consumer. So the reason I think long term AT&T is still okay and Verizon's still okay is that they have this other piece to the business and they're evolving, and they're not just wireline businesses that have gone now to wireless businesses to just data, but now they're understanding content. And in the case of Verizon and Yahoo, they're understanding the consumer. So the Yahoo acquisition for a Verizon, I think, makes a lot of sense because it's understanding the advertising of the consumer, and Yahoo's giving them the ability to be in that business, which is extraordinarily important as mobile advertising continues to be a pervasive part of the economy, right? And now Verizon with a Yahoo will have more ability to do that. So I think longer term, that's the model that these guys, that these old telecom companies need to evolve into. So I'm a believer in that relative to a company like a Sprint. They've got to do the same thing. Either they're going to get acquired, because they can't just stay this old line business forever in the rapidly changing digital economy that we live in. So my answer here is that I've got to see a company, and all of these companies have to evolve. So if it's not going to evolve along with its peers, AT&T, Verizon, then it's not something that I want to own. The other thought is that you've got these really relatively high dividends, right? You've got you've got over a 5% dividend for AT&T and Verizon. They both pay about 5.1%. It's right now, I'd say that there's some comfort in that dividend despite the stock prices actually going down this year. So if you look over the last year to date, AT&T is down about 11, Verizon's down 16, which is a big percentage, but it continues to pay a pretty healthy dividend. At least there's a little bit of a consolation there. These are businesses that are just in the middle of a giant evolution, and they're trying to evolve. Ironically, and I don't know if it's because this prompted the call or not, but this week was the 10th anniversary of the iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, think of what has happened just in 10 short years. 10 years ago in a couple weeks, we didn't even have an iPhone. Wasn't even around. Today, that's what we use in America. And I remember looking back at web statistics on, you know, who visits the website. You know, Google Analytics shows you more and more data about who visits. Well, it used to be 95% desktop when I would look at statistics, and then it was 70%, and then it's 50%. And I looked the other day, it was something like 10% of the folks that read the stories on westmoss.com are on a desktop. 10%. The other 90% are either on a smartphone or a tablet. So it's just, and that's all happened in this tiny period of time. The technology is just so rapidly evolving. So if you're not staying with that technological change, mobile advertising, then I think as a company, you've got some real problems. Which kind of leads me, and by the way, thank you for the call. What this leads me to, this thought about this concept of the singularity in the modern world that we live in, technology, automation, you wonder how far these advancements really go. If you think about just what happened in the last 10 years of the iPhone, what happens over the next 10 years? And today it's not all that absurd to wonder if AI or artificial intelligence is going to replace everything, you know, humans, human workers. And you've got to ask yourself that question. And I know that a lot of the folks listening to this show, I think that's a question I often get. Hey, what are our grandkids, maybe not even our grandkids, what are our kids going to do in 20 years in this economy? And, you know, it's not that much science, it's not as science fiction oriented as it probably sounded even 5 and 10 years ago. It's, and part of this, and I remember hearing about this theory called the singularity. This has been around for decades. And I remember, I think I heard this probably for the first time about 10 or 15 years ago and kind of dismissed it. Ah, that'll never happen. The singularity means that there's a point in time when an equation is no longer defined or well-behaved or it becomes infinite. So really, now this is synonymous with not well-behaved. So this term, singularity, when and this prompted me, I wanted to talk about this anyway today, but it's an interesting segue from talking about Verizon, Yahoo, into this. Singularity is also this term that's been coined for a theory that at some point, the massive evolution of computing power and artificial intelligence is going to exceed our own intelligence as humans. And in its worst form, the singularity is predicted to produce the result of an all-out machine-driven world. So it takes over human enterprise, which sounds pretty scary. And it sounds a little bit like it's out of a George Orwell novel, but we see it. We see it every day now. I mean, you've got IBM's Watson that's taken over. It beat the Grandmasters of Chess now a long time ago and won Jeopardy, but also doing commercials now with John Hamm and taking over what seems to be all the work for H&R Block, right? So where do the jobs go? Well, do they just go to artificial intelligence? And if it continues to grow, it doesn't mean that machines are going to inevitably take over the, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to take over the world. What's, I think, much more likely is that humans are going to have a tremendous amount of benefits from harnessing that technology, especially if you think about what it's going to do in medicine and biotechnology. And the positive side of this, as opposed to having computers take over the world and replace all of our jobs, the positive side of this, and this goes back to our creative destruction theme we've talked about in the Amazon and Whole Foods in the grocery industry, but the process of creative destruction, so yes, you lose some jobs, but what do you do? You gain new jobs in this creation process, which I think that also is the benefit to this singularity concept. So the positive and I think more plausible spin on singularities, it could lead to human lives living longer, richer, fuller lives. And again, you go back to where did the idea come from? Well, pretty simply, you've probably heard of this thought of Moore's Law, and it comes from this Gordon Moore, who was one of the co-founders of IBM, but Intel. And he, again, let's call him the godfather of semiconductors or chips that process information. Well, they effectively, what he said as they evolved over time is that they doubled in capacity and speed and efficiency, what really the let's call it the horsepower of a chip every 2 years and then eventually every 18 months. And that's, if you think about the technological capacity, doubling every 18 months, very powerful. And this has been happening all the way back since the 1970s. And now that's what we call Moore's Law, derived from Charles Moore. And as it relates to technology, the theory of singularity extrapolates Moore's Law. And it basically says, look, if we continue to double artificial intelligence capacity, and it doubles every 18 months or 2 years, then by 2045, technology is just going to surpass human capacity. Or the 2040s, let's say. But I think that even though that sounds like a scary proposition, I don't think that these come through because of just a few strong basic principles of human existence. And that goes back to understanding that we are emotional and psychologically motivated beings. And artificial intelligence can't replace those human feelings. Artificial intelligence is rooted in rationality. We are irrational as humans, and that irrationality, I think, saves us ultimately or psychologically from getting taken over by artificial intelligence. What I think we will do is our psychology will drive us to and puts us in charge of deciding how to grow and how to harness artificial intelligence. And for the singularity to wreak havoc on jobs, and economic incentives would have to be, they'd have to be there for companies to invest in the rise of this over human jobs. And if you take it too far, the proposition becomes self-defeating. If a business switches everything to fully automated systems delivery, and all businesses do that, then we've got no more human wage earners to buy anything. So artificial intelligence would ultimately be its own worst enemy, and it would be self-destructive. It would bring down the very world that it is aiming to take over, which economically, there's not an incentive to do that. So ultimately, you hear these predictions of technology can take over the world, technology can take all of our jobs. Ultimately, there's no more, if all jobs are taken, there's no more consumption left because none of us are making any money. So at some point, that incentive becomes disincentivizing. And that's why I don't think that we get taken over by AI. I don't think we get taken over by the singularity. But it's worth noting and understanding and trying to continue to keep a good eye on the evolution of technology and what it does to our economy and our industry, because that is the big picture that we always have to understand. Big picture economics in order for the pie to get bigger. And as investors, that's the one thing we need to have happen. The economic pie has to get bigger in order for you and I to have the faith to stay invested in stocks over time. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We're going to run to break. Quick news, weather, traffic. Then more Money Matters right here, News Daily 5 a.m. 750 WSB.
We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday. It's Independence Day weekend. Exciting. And I was actually just looking at the weather headed north. We've got a couple days headed north in Michigan, and I'm looking at the weather up there, and it looks a little, just a little cooler than here, and I guess that's why we go, right? And my wife's family is in Michigan, and we go to this little place called Holland, and we're going to go to a little place called Petoskey. But the deal here is that it looks like Wednesday is 82 up there, Thursday 80 degrees in Michigan on Lake Michigan, and then Friday at 81. So still in the 80s, a lower 80s, and it gets down into the 60s in the evening. And if you're right on the lake, because Lake Michigan stays really cool still this time of year, you get a little bit of breeze, it drops at another 5 degrees. At least I hope it continues to do that. That's why we're headed north, in search of cooler weather. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. If you want to find me and the team as we wrap up today, we publish almost every day at wesmoss.com. And there's the money section, adventure, success, health, happiness. MASH is our acronym for the four things we like to write about. The money section, obviously, a lot of things we talk about here on Money Matters ultimately end up as articles on wesmoss.com. So yeah, we've written a lot about what we think, where jobs are headed in the future, where what this Amazon Whole Foods deal means as a period of time that we'll remember as a seminal event in the evolution of our economy. And it's there on wesmoss.com. We also write a lot about retirement. We have contributors, Walter Updegrave, who is the proprietor of Real Deal Retirement, contributes to the retirement section. And so there's a lot to read. The most popular articles in the last couple of weeks here, last week or so, four retirement mistakes that can cost you $250,000 or more. Check it out at wesmoss.com. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. You can email us, email in the contact, hit the contact button. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Enjoy this wonderful Independence Day weekend and the holiday week, of course. Stay tuned to WSB Radio for the best programming on the planet.